talk about this thing that's in my brain. It keeps me from wanting to come on, but I want some gain.
Let's push.
Maybe a little fame.
Yeah. You ready?
Ready.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the We the Patriots podcast. And with me today is rejoining us for a little bit of a recap and maybe second episode, I guess you could say, with my good friend, author William Douglas. How is everything today?
Salvatore, thanks for having me on for part two. I enjoyed the first one, and I'm sure we'll have a little fun in this second follow-up here. So thanks for having me on.
I'm sure ever since we talked, you got a new print on your book. It looks like a gorgeous new title. It's got a couple of forwards to it, a few different comments,
new cover.
You get most of it.
Yeah.
But so what was in the works there? When did you start working on putting a new cover on that bad boy?
You know, back in the wintertime, I went on a couple of author forums on Facebook, some groups, and says, you know what, I'm going to just put the original cover to the test. I can't be just a snob about it just because I had a major input into the design, into the first cover. So I put it out there. I says, okay, don't pull any punches. What do you think about the cover? And it flunked.
Okay.
It flunked big time. I'm like, okay, I guess we need a new cover. So I found a gal out in Iowa.
Okay.
Who happens to be an avid baseball fan and also an avid Cub fan. I'm an avid Sox fan, so that was kind of funny. But she came up with the reimagined cover.
Gotcha.
And really, if I can use a baseball euphemism, hit it out of the park. So
that's really what I want to use here.
Yeah, really is a phenomenal second attempt at the cover for the story. So I think it does a good job of conveying the story. In my head, I thought the first one did too, but it's only after you read the book that the cover of the first rendition makes sense, I think, to some people.
Right, which makes sense. So yeah. are you continuing this story at this point? Are you still writing?
I am still writing. I was challenged to actually tackle the undercurrent in the first book is this civil war that in book time is 100 years in the past. So I am now in chapter 10 of the next novel, which is currently titled The Second American Civil War. So it tackles all the social issues that we have ongoing right now, all the divisions in the country, and it amplifies them 40 years in the future, in the year 2061, which is when the war starts. So,
right. Well, that sounds good. Any other works in progress?
No, that's the major one right now. Okay. So that and continuing to, try to push the first book along and get more exposure. So, thanks for the. That's where being on podcasts like yours is a big help.
Well, no, any help that I can give and just being able to pick your brain a little bit is always fun.
Right. And in case your listeners are listening, they better be listening. Salvatore provided a very, very keen quote that's now included in the front matter of the book. So him and several others. Right on page one, boom, at the very top, there's Salvatore's quote. So I thought it was a very powerful quote.
I appreciate that. No, I mean, I don't like taking reading lightly when somebody puts a book, even though it was not necessarily tailored toward a 22-year-old at the time when I read it. It still, to me, hit a lot of points that needed to be hit in a book nowadays. And it was a really good piece of work, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Not everybody's going to say it's their cup of tea, and that's not the point of a book. but I thought the review kind of just highlighted what I really felt hit me from it. And I hope, you know, I hope that enough people saw my review and it made them think I got to give it a shot instead of the other way around.
Sure. Sure. Yeah. Absolutely.
So how was your success on Amazon and other platforms? I'm curious. Did you find that you outsourcing to Amazon helped you a lot?
Yeah, so I self-published through Amazon and Ingram Spark. Of course, Amazon's self-explanatory. Ingram Spark is a print-on-demand publisher that helps self-published authors go what they call wide. So by wide, I mean Ingram Spark was able to push the book out to Apple, Google, Barnes & Noble, and a bunch of other places as well. So it helps to diversify the places where your book is available. So that's helped. I also hired out a very talented voice actor from Detroit by the name of Rodney Tompkins.
Okay.
He did a phenomenal job on the audio version of the book, which also just came out. I really recommend, you know, if people have an interest in the book, but they don't have time to read a book, you know, get the audio version. You can punch it up in your car on your way to work or driving around doing errands or whatever, or working from your home office. He really did a phenomenal job. You know, when I first connected with him, you know, I told him the story, like, I said, oh, that sounds a little interesting. So I sent him a, when I sent him the copy, he wrote back and he said, this is really good. I'm going to give this some extra special attention in my performance. So that was pretty cool. But he's got a voice, a deeper voice, kind of shades of James Earl Jones, but not quite.
Okay.
He does a really good job.
Well, that sounds great. I'm going to have to go get into it because is it on Audible?
Yes, it is. It's on Audible. If you're an Audible member, it's a free download right now. If you're not an Audible member, I think it's like, I don't know, $14, $15 to.
Yep. I got an Amazon credit for it. So I'm definitely going to go try to use it on that.
Sure. Yeah.
I love Audible so much. I do that going to and from work, getting
books
in. Is that something that you take advantage of as well?
Yeah, I was just listening to a book yesterday while I was working. So it's nice to be able to do that and multitask and still enjoy, you know, the story.
Yeah, definitely. So I know we were talking last time and you mentioned that a lot of years you've taken time out of your year to go down to spring training for baseball in real life. Did you take an opportunity to do that this year?
No, I wanted to. My brother was in spring training for the Cubs out in Mesa. And next year I'm going for sure, because next year I'm hoping to be retired. from my money job.
From your day
writing job. Books is not my money job right now, but from my money job, I hope to be retired. I work for Boeing Aerospace.
Do you really? What do you do for them?
I'm in corporate IT.
Okay. Yeah. I got you. I thought you were an engineering mind. You're about to scare the living daylights out of me.
Excuse me. No engineer. Just a computer geek.
Yeah, that's good enough. That's close
enough. A long time.
And I'm not sure if I asked this question in the first one, but I'll ask it anyway. Did you endeavor in writing when you were younger and just come back to it? Or is this something that's come to you as you've, you know, experienced a lot in Boeing, experienced a lot in life and watching baseball? How did
I did have an interest in writing when I was younger. In fact, I think I was probably, I don't know, probably about 10 years old. And I had to say, I'm going to write this book. You know, it was called Master Plan. I don't remember what the heck the story was, but it was some kind of sci-fi thing or something. I don't remember, but I wish I still had a copy of it. But I remember writing it on lined notebook paper in pen, writing this story. And of course, I never finished it, but, you know, always had an interest in writing. So
that's awesome.
It took a while to finally get to this point of actually writing a book that happened in 2016. But I took advantage of the pandemic year in 2020 to actually finish the book.
I mean, everybody had a little extra time, it seems like, then. So it was worth it.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
Definitely worth it. I mean, what came out of it?
Right. Right.
Yeah, I love it. But so you didn't get down to spring training. You've been paying attention to the Sox this year? Or has it been a hard walk?
Yeah, I just saw the standings this morning. So they got 24 wins. The Cubs got 24 wins. And, of course, they got a lot more losses than wins. But the Sox have been starting to come around a little bit. It'd be interesting to see what happens here in the month of June, if they can kind of flip those numbers around and at least get up to 500 by the end of the month.
This is the month where you got to turn it around here in July, or else you're in for a bad year.
Yeah, right. June, July, you got to get it done. So, I don't know. I'm feeling better about them than I was a month ago. A month ago, I was ready to write them off for the season.
Yeah, no, I think a lot of people were. So that's good though, because I know last year they really were kind of supposed to win that division, and they did not.
I know they had a huge rebuild program, went all the way down into their minor league system. Mm-hmm. Of course, in 2021, they had that big game with the Yankees at the Field of Dreams, and they had that dramatic comeback in the bottom of the ninth. And mm-hmm. I was feeling good. And then they get to the playoffs and then bomb out in the first round. But I thought for sure, okay, next year, things will get better. But I don't know what kind of a rebuild they did, but they better take another look at it, because it so far isn't doing too well.
Yeah, it's definitely not showing the fruits of the labor at this point. I mean, you take a look at that. You take a look at a team like Boston, where they got rid of almost the entire team, and it doesn't seem to have a turnaround. Like,
right.
Big rebuilds right. really pay off? I don't know. I haven't seen it.
Right. Yep.
And do you watch any other baseball? Is there any other team that you can get behind?
You know, I like the Brewers. The Cardinals are always fun, because it seems like they're perennial favorites, or at least not favorites, at least, but perennially, they seem to always be in the hunt.
Mm-hmm.
And I've even seen them come back from big deficits like they're in right now, and turn around and put a really good run together after the All-Star break. So I don't know what their secret is, but I wish the White Sox would copy it in their organization, because they're always there. They're always there at the end.
Yeah, I don't know. The White Sox seem like they're just missing like a piece of glue. I was really sad to see that they let Jose Abreu go.
I know it. I couldn't believe it. Couldn't believe it.
I thought that was a cornerstone.
Big power hitter, and I think he's someone you can build a franchise around. But
right.
You know, what are you gonna do? It's done now.
It's all done. He was a good player for you guys for a long time. It's sad that he didn't get a chance to go.
Right. 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 I'm trying to find the name of the gal that did. Oh yeah, Brenda Lesch, Lesch. She's one that did the new cover. I found her on Upwork.com.
Upwork is awesome.
Yeah, he's Upwork or Fiverr. So Rodney, and also the gentleman that did the book trailer. I found them on Fiverr.
Awesome. Like
the cover design and the front matter work. I found those talents on Upwork.
I love it. I wanted to dive a little deeper on a few things of your book, if you were willing to.
Yeah, let's do it. I love it.
So I know that one of the things that we talked about a lot, and especially as one of the cornerstones of the book, is the declining popularity of baseball.
Uh-huh.
Do you have anything in your mind that would alleviate some of the issues that we're seeing now and try to nip it in the bud before it obviously gets to a point of your book?
Oh man, that's a good question. I went to I have a friend at our church. He's a manager of Grant High School baseball in Fox Lake. That's the name of the high school in
Yeah.
Fox Lake, Illinois, Grant High School. And they were in a sectional game in a town called Dundee, in about a half an hour south of where I live here in McHenry. And I was talking to him at church. I said, "Yeah, I'm going to come by and go see your sectional game." So I drove down there and I walked past two abandoned ball fields in order to get to the high school field.
Really?
There's no way there'd ever been a game there for quite a long time. The backstops were up, but they've been converted into soccer fields, which is something I mentioned in my book. But to the point of your question, I think a couple of things has to happen.
Okay.
The first would be somehow we've got to get the kids out onto the ball field amongst themselves and just playing pickup games of baseball like I did when I was a kid with no adults. I think that's a very key element. Yeah, sure, they can have adults, kind of teaching them things in their own backyard, how to hit and pitch and stuff like that. But then I think it would be really important to somehow bring back the popularity of sandlot ball. And the reason I say that, because, when you're playing sandlot ball, when there's no adults around, the kids, first of all, they have to relate to one another. They have to communicate with one another. And kids communicating right now verbally is becoming increasingly awkward because everybody's so buried in their social media.
Correct.
So it forces them to communicate, but also it forces them, at their own level to learn and to perfect the art of conflict resolution, right? Because what do you have on a baseball field with, is the runner safe? There's a runner out? Was it a ball? Was it a strike? And you have to come to a resolution, otherwise the game just stops and nothing happens. And so I think that's an important life lesson that comes out of playing sandlot ball. And
Sure.
that's a lesson that carries on forward for the rest of your life, is to be able to, resolve conflicts and be able to communicate with other human beings in a sensible manner. But also, obviously, the biggest thing that comes out of sandlot ball is the love of the game and the ability to pick up the nuances in the game and the skills of the game because of repetition. And that is the key thing, is the repetition of playing all the time and picking up the skills of the game. Not all the parents can afford to put their kids in the travel ball. And then now you have the situation where, some towns may not even have a house league anymore,
Right.
so their options become limited. Now, thankfully, here in McHenry, there still is a house league.
Which is a rec league for anybody
Yeah,
not.
rec, yeah,
Yep.
yeah, house league, rec league, whatever you want to call it. It's not run by the park district. It's run by a local, private organization called McHenry Baseball Association.
Right.
They've been around since the 50s, but it's not anywhere near as big as it was when my son was in it, when my son was playing in it back in the 90s and early Y2Ks. So that would be a big thing, that first point. Second point would be, you gotta enable the kids to see the game on TV, a lot more easier than it is now.
I
Because
agree more.
let's say you have a one parent household and the parent just has no time or interest in baseball and isn't going to pay anybody for the baseball package for their local home team, They're not going to pay for MLB TV. They're not going to do any of that. So the child at home has no or very rare opportunities to see a free baseball game on television.
Agreed.
So that needs to be addressed. Even with, you know, a nuclear family with mom and dad in the home.
I was going to say, even situation. I'll say I have MLB TV, and with the blackouts, you end up not being able to watch the baseball you want anyway.
That's another problem. Yeah, so, that's correct.
You know, it's like you're going to have to go and install cable on your house just to watch the Yankees.
Correct.
Like $160 a month now for what?
Is that what their package is? Oh my God.
To get everything installed, and you're essentially, you have to buy the internet with it. It's terrible. It's a whole scam. Yeah.
Right. So that's a problem. That's a problem that baseball has gone down this road where they're locking out potentially huge numbers of fans because of monetary issues. So, and then even like I say, I was starting to say about a nuclear family of mom and dad in the home. If you have, you know, maybe both of them don't have an interest, or maybe they can't afford it, or maybe they're too busy playing taxi driver and bringing kids to all the different activities that they're doing besides baseball. Right. So, you know, one kid's at home while both the parents are playing taxi driver. The kid can't even turn on the game because it's not available because they don't have the package. So that would be one thing. And the third thing would be to make, you know, games more affordable to attend
in person.
In person, let's say by, you know, let's say a family of four. Right. So my mom was just in town a couple of weeks ago with my dad, and my brother and I took my mom to Wrigley Field. And for the three of us, the sum total of the bill for the three of us was easily well over $300, you know, just for a day at Wrigley. That includes parking, the tickets, concessions, souvenirs, everything else. So
just like New York. That's crazy.
Yeah. Now I know some teams are, you know, they have a family night. Like I think the White Sox have a family day is on Sundays, where they have some very affordable ticket packages. But you know, when you get a really a marquee name like the Cubs or Yankees or the Red Sox, I don't think they're selling tickets at $10 a ticket just because they have a family day. Because I don't think they have a family day. They don't need a family day because, you know, they're selling all the tickets they can sell right now.
Yeah, you'll get
for the lesser name franchises. You know, I think some of them are doing a nice attempt to try and have a family day and make it an affordable. So it's like the Sox. I think on their family day, you can buy a ticket for $10. I mean, you're up in the upper deck, but for $10, you get a ticket, a Coke, and a hot dog, or something like that. So,
yeah.
You know, that makes it, you know,
pretty worth it.
Affordable for a family of four to go down and take in a game. But they need more of that.
Yeah, definitely. I don't think it could be a family night. I think it just has to be a family deal. As long as it's
right. Or a family section, you know, you show up at the park with your kids, and automatically you can buy some seats in some family section or something like that, you know. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Obviously, you can't do that online, but, you know, I think most baseball franchises are not selling out every game online. So if you had
a
walk-up capability.
You should.
Yeah, right. Yeah, right.
So yeah, I agree. It's a real commodity. Now, I want to go back to your first point because I actually love it. So sandlot ball. How is that even achievable with the way that parenting and just the world is nowadays? How is that even possible?
You know, it would probably take a parent to get it going. I mean, not necessarily to sit there and and hover over them, but, you know, at least to try and get it going, you know, get a bunch of kids together, drop them off at the park, you know, assuming that they already have some knowledge of the fundamentals. If not, then, you know, yeah, maybe you have to take some time out to teach them the fundamentals, but at some point, you know, you cut them loose and let them just play the game on their own. Now, I know someone's already thinking, yeah, but, you know, it's a crazy world now. Like, yeah, good point. So you can see a situation where there might be areas where you can't just take 10 kids and leave them all alone in a park, you know, because of the world that we're in, unfortunately. But at least you can be nearby, whether on a bench 100 yards away or you know, in your car nearby, just to keep an eye on things and make sure there's no danger element that comes into play for the safety of the kids.
Right. And that's the worst part to me in that conversation, is the fact that you have to have that conversation.
I know, that's you know, that, quite frankly, that sucks, but then unfortunately that's the world that we're in right now.
Just the world.
Yeah. And then, of course, the other part would be, you know, the parent or guardian to talk to the child about baseball and teach them, take them out of the backyard and throw catch, and try to, you know, instill in an early age, you know, a love for the game and an interest for the game. So, sure.
Yeah, definitely. I hope that quite a few of those things happen. I hope that all of them do. The biggest one for me, I'll be honest, is the sandlot ball would be awesome. You could get away with wiffle ball, I think, which is what it turned into as I was a kid.
Uh-huh.
Even that's died.
Yeah, but, you don't see wiffle ball anywhere.
No, that's my point. The only people that play wiffle ball are people my age who are like adults in college and stuff. And it's like, that's, it's not kids. What I do want to see is you should be able, it doesn't matter what TV package you have. If you live in New Jersey, you should be able to turn it on. You should watch the Yankees and the Mets and the Phillies. Doesn't matter. Uh-huh. And if I'm anywhere in New York, it should be the same. If I'm anywhere in Boston, I should be able to watch the Red Sox no matter what. This needs to happen. I think that that's a requirement. It shouldn't be you have to pay to watch the local sports teams. What is the
point? And a lot of these packages, you get them and they're still advertising during the game. So it's like, okay, this is kind of a double dip here.
That's what I don't understand, is how are you charging me as a streaming service, but then putting advertisements on top of it, when every other streaming service I've bought in general, or like think of a YouTube Premium, it removes the ads.
Sure.
What is the point? It's really just like you said, it's a double dip. They know they have the market cornered.
Correct.
And fortunately, I think that this is the only way that teams are going to be able to afford these contracts they're giving out now.
Well, and you know, yeah, that indirectly is touched upon in the book too, where, you know, at least in the book, one of the things that helped kill the sport is a 3-year strike. You know, I mean, we almost had one not that long ago. It looked like
the last year
strike, you know, and they pulled it out. But there's been strikes before, and there'll be strikes again.
Absolutely.
And you know, at least in my storyline, that was an ingredient that helps kill the sport, is a 3-year labor strike at the professional level. So
definitely. And I'm assuming you're foreseeing it getting worse. It seems like they're just making deals by a thread, the same way our government does, just to save the butts. And
Right.
All right. And we're back after a short bathroom break by myself. And I actually had a great point brought up to me by Mr. William himself, just letting me know that I really got affected by this book. And why is a different reason. So number one, I've never read a baseball book, really. not a novel. I've read tons of statistical stuff. I've just read lots of analytical or how to get better at baseball, but never a novel, never something trying to teach anything with the sport of baseball. And when you see something so accurately depicted, even though it's a novel, it usually means that everything is so true. And that's what came out of that novel. When I'm reading it, it's hitting all the points when I was a kid. Even, you know, we would be able to go and run a pickup game when I was a kid. Not that it happened often. It wasn't something like the movie Sandlot. It was not that. But
what years were that, Salvatore?
When I was a kid playing wiffle ball, especially I had a neighbor who had a wiffle ball like stadium built by his father, one of the coolest things. So that would, I would say anywhere between 2004 and 2008 around.
Okay.
There.
Okay.
And we would get people there, you know, we'd have parties, we'd have games of, you know, 20 people, 20 kids just playing wiffle ball, maybe even adults too, just having fun. But that was my Sandlot experience. And when I actually moved to the house that I'm at now, it just slowly faded away, especially since those guys stopped playing baseball. A lot of them moved on to either lacrosse or football and just committed to those things. And everything you were saying was ringing true, you know, everything going to soccer, everything going to lacrosse. Not too many people committing their time in baseball. And when they do, they seem to just ask for more and more money. I just could not stop saying, wow, that's correct. Wow, that's correct. And I hope it doesn't go to this, because you were talking about a future that's kind of not a future. You're talking about a time that's right now. And it hit home. Mm-hmm. That's why I definitely suggest you don't even really need to care about baseball, but if you care about why somebody might want to preserve a part of their past, or why anybody feels any type of way about any specific thing, read the book, because you don't have to apply it to baseball. You apply it to life. It's you see a deteriorating thing, and it actually is not just baseball. It's the whole idea of this great country that we created.
Correct.
Just using baseball as a sample. And that's why I loved it.
Yeah.
Baseball
is always
what you did. I think that's what you tried anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. Baseball has always been a metaphor for America. So there's a lot of euphemisms, or not euphemisms, there's a lot of tie-ins to the country when you talk about baseball. And so when you read the story, you know, you can just as easily apply some of the things in the story to the country itself, and not just the sport. So
definitely. I mean, it used to literally be that's as American as baseball and apple pie.
Correct.
That used to be the saying. So
right.
When it's turned into that's American as apple pie, and I don't even hear that anymore.
No, you're right. You're right.
Like,
or America's pastime. You don't hear that phrase at all, except
it's not.
I hear it in a movie or something, but
it's not. And I had a conversation with I think it was even after we talked, I had a conversation with a college coach that coaches near my baseball program. And what he was saying was very true, is that at this point, America's pastime is more so football than anything.
Absolutely. Correct.
And correct. It would be kind of silly for us to keep putting the connotation that baseball is America's pastime, when our whole country at this point, like 60 to 75% of the sport followers follow football.
Right.
They follow American football.
And isn't it interesting? The number of days in the week you can turn on the TV and see a free football game, right? Even your home team. No special package. You just, hey, what time the Bears playing, what time the Patriots are playing, what time, you know, whoever.
But you're guaranteed to have what? Two?
You can see them.
You're guaranteed to have two games that you could see every week, Monday night and Sunday night football, and now Thursday night?
Right. 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 So, and then the, how the NFL has pumped up their whole draft day thing and made that into an entertainment spectacle. And, they've done a good job of marketing their brand.
Absolutely.
I think the MLB could do that too, but they're going to have to really take a step back and evaluate the whole idea of what's behind MLB TV and how they want you to pay for it. They should just cut it loose, let it be free, and let people watch the game.
Yeah, definitely. And find a way to make it accessible, right?
Yeah. So,
stop trying to invest so much money in making it earn more money by payment.
Yeah.
Spend less time by making it more reachable.
Yeah.
The more people you reach, the more people, more butts in seats, the more money you're going to make eventually.
Yep.
And in my opinion, it wouldn't be the worst thing if ticket prices kept going up, but online viewership was completely just universal. You did not. If that was the case, then I don't care what the ticket prices are, because guess what's going to happen? It's going to level it out.
Yeah.
People are going to be like, yeah, I'd rather stay home. The prices are too high.
Right, right. And
it would level out. It would level out. But you would have full stadiums. You would have more people interested in the games.
Sure. Yep.
I don't know. I don't know if it's a possibility.
You know, the MLB touched upon, I think, with their Field of Dreams concept. That's something I hope that they can continue and expand on that, because, you know, that first one with the Yankees and the White Sox, that was a ratings blockbuster. I think they had 6 million viewers or something.
Yeah.
It was an incredible ratings smash. Not as big the second year with the Cubs and the Reds, but, you know, doing stuff like that and putting it out there for free, I think only can have a positive benefit as far as getting fan interest retained and enhanced for the game. So
definitely. So I think that was a good point. That's actually where I'll probably just end it here with this question. You kind of mentioned the world of baseball there, not just America. We kind of talked about it in the first interview. So what is the impact possibly of a sport like baseball going away, especially at this point? What do you see as the biggest loss here?
Yeah. Well, and I think it's important to, we have to, as part of this dialogue, we have to acknowledge the intelligence of the listeners to the program. I mean, I don't think you or I are saying that baseball is in imminent danger of collapse. Now, what we've been talking about here is the macro picture, the long-term picture.
It's the fear
or its health and viability. And I think you and I have both, we can see the warning signs that there are things that, if left unchanged, could actually lead to its, if not its total demise, then its diminishment into obscurity. I mean, something along the line of curling, you know. How many fans are there of curling, or, you know, something like that? Or badminton, you know, some kind of sport that, you know, no one really cares or watches anymore. I think the significance really of losing the sport is that we lose a part of our culture. You know, baseball has been so interwoven with the culture and the history of the nation. When you think about baseball really, really coming on strong into its own in the early parts of the 20th century, and how it's been a part of the country ever since. So if you lose that, you know, you lose a part of your identity as a nation. And then you lose all the benefits of just the game itself, the enjoyability of watching a game, attending the game, playing the game, and the residual benefits of, you know, when you go to a game and you can have, you know, a conservative and a liberal sitting next to each other in the stands, but they don't even talk about that stuff because they're talking about the game and they're They're laughing and having a good time and getting along. And we need more of getting along in America, because what we have now is a spiral down the rabbit hole. And then you have, the residual benefit of family bonds, when you go out and bring your son to a game or daughter to a game or whatever, and just the bond. I mean, it's not like this giant thing, but it's all just part of the story of one's life. You have fond memories of, oh yeah, I remember when Dad took me to the game, or Grandpa or Mom or whoever took me to the game, and
definitely, yeah,
and how much fun we had, I took my mom to Wrigley for the first time ever in my life back in 2017, and I remember thinking to myself, you idiot. Why didn't you wait so long to take your mom to Wrigley Field, knowing that she's a Cub fan? But, point was, we got it done. We made the memory, and then we just took her back again. And those are all things that I'll remember for the rest of my life. So
that should never stop.
Yeah, never stop.
I'll end it completely on this. Would you say that the health of baseball, in your eyes, is a good barometer of the health of the nation at a given moment?
Yeah, I think you can draw correlations. I think you can, we all know the health of the nation right now is not good. It's been very sobering, writing my next novel. Like I said earlier, I'm in chapter 10 of my next novel. It mm-hmm. takes on the nightmare of a second American Civil War. And there have been so many days when I woke up and there was a news story having to do with the various divisions and stuff that had a tie-in with the storyline of my book, and it's just like kind of creepy. And
probably tells you you're doing a good job though.
Yeah, right. But I think there's still time to turn things around. I think there's a spiritual component there, and we need another spiritual awakening in the country. And for those that aren't spiritual, we just need to I've said this before, I used the phrase, relearn the art of agreeing to disagree and getting along with one another.
Absolutely.
Even though we do disagree.
Absolutely. So
those are very important things.
Mr. Douglas, I could not be any more appreciative of you coming back on. I don't want to lose contact here. You are one of my favorite guests, and I think
let's stay in touch. And it was fun, especially when I get ready with the next book. So we'll have to come on and talk about it, since you have such an appropriately named podcast, We the Patriot.
I appreciate it. But everybody, go check out his book right now. Is out with a redesigned cover, and you'll even find a few of my own words in it. There it is, The Death and Resurrection of Baseball. And look at that. I love it. So, of course, there'll be links there. You can go get your own copy. Go listen to it now. You have an audio book. You have hard copies. You can get an ebook. So you can really go any direction that you want with this. For now, I will catch you guys on the next episode.
Thanks, Salvatore.
Damn. Absolutely.
I wish I were the fucking state. I want to be something, not nothing. Trapped inside my dream and I'm running. Running away from these demons, but the feeling's so good, I'ma keep dreaming.